Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe at the Bill Murray Pub in Angel Island. Please welcome a man who's got a mouthful of hairspray. It's Richard Herring!
Thank you very much. Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to Richard Herring's Large Space Telescope podcast. We decided to change direction a bit. It's going to be mainly just about telescopes, not about space, just my favourite large space telescopes. I found a page that has acronyms of LST on it. That's basically what's happened. So we'll work our way through those for the upcoming tour, richardherring.com/rahalastapa. Good. I was hanging out at Blockbuster Video the other day. My friend's down there. Ooh, what a feeling. Is that what it was? No. They call it Rahalastapa, so we've got... Got a double Rahalastapa. I was gigging Ealing last night. Lovely gig at the Ealing Comedy Festival in a big tent. And I decided, because I was in London 2 days in a row, I decided to stay over. And I had breakfast at Pret a Manger. I don't know if you know. It's a nice restaurant, French restaurant. It was nice. So the lady at the next table decided to spray hairspray on her hair in quite an enclosed, which I found was quite a rude thing to do. In a place where people were eating, she didn't seem to care. I didn't bring it up because, you know, it's Ealing, you could be stabbed. So I didn't... It's all right, I used to live in West London. I can definitely say that straight. It's no Shepherd's Bush, but it's... I'm sure I've told this story before, but I used to work in Ealing. One of my first jobs was at British Telecom in Ealing, and I changed Stuart Lee's name in the phone book to Stuart Wee. So if you can find me, I told them about that. Looking up for people with rude names. Anyway, look, we're going to... So it's nice to be back in Ealing. Look, we're going to crack on. We've got a fabulous guest for you who's doing the Edinburgh Fringe. She's probably best known for her appearance on Repair Shop, The Making of Bicycle Thieves Pumped Up. Which I don't know what that is. Will you please welcome... I know what repair shop is. Will you please welcome Alison Spittle, ladies and gentlemen? Here she is. Come here. Come. It's Alison Spittle.
Oh, hello. Hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
Love to see you.
I'm excited you picked that one.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot. There was a lot to choose from.
That
Alison.
Was probably the one I'm least embarrassed about as well. Well,
I just was interested in the length of the title. What was it?
Bicycle Thieves Pumped Up is an independent film made by my friend Connor O'Toole.
Okay.
And it's about a woman who gets her bike stolen, and she has anger issues. And then a whale speaks to her at some point. And she gets the bike back.
Okay.
Through violence.
So it's not. Is it anything to do with repair shop then, or is that so? Repair? Did repair shop repair the film? Why is repair shop?
I think that might have been a behind the scenes footage that they did a pun on repair shop about.
Okay.
Yeah, I played a woman called Bev, who owns a pizza place, who told the protagonist that she's too angry and must change her ways. But I did it in what? One in a Dublin accent that someone has described as a hate crime. So
I wait till they hear my Dublin accent, then they'll know what a hate crime is. I nearly checked. This is too good, but I thought it would be funny to make out this was a main character. You played Deborah in EastEnders. That's very exciting. Tell us about Deborah in EastEnders.
That happened this year. So what happened was my agent asked me to do a self-tape for EastEnders. I am a massive fan of EastEnders. Love it so much. I think Danielle getting hit by a car is my September the 11th. Like, truthfully, it sticks to me in my mind. So I love it. And I did a self-tape and I wore my Pat Butcher earrings, which are pictures of Pat Butcher as earrings. To give a little hint that I was a fan, and I tried to do like my best English accent.
Right.
So my dad is English, so like I feel like I can like get into it. Like when I was a kid, when I was a child, Richard, I had an English accent.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I sounded like a little Danny Dyer. So I did. So so I just channeled that, and I had to play a pregnant lady, so they gave me a little pouch. And I took a picture of me in the pouch on Instagram. And as I've been holding this in for a while, .. I'm in EastEnders. But Irish newspapers thought that I was pregnant.
Right.
And my mother was quite upset that I wouldn't tell her first. So, but a great day. They drove me around in a golf buggy. They showed me the real Albert Square,
right,
which is a rectangle. Showbiz secret there. And I had an amazing time. Like Shona, the lady who played Whitney, who's incredible, she brought me into the Queen Vic and let me take pictures.
Wow.
Yeah, like really, really lovely. It was like Disneyland for me.
That's nice as well, because you'd think they work there all the time and like someone comes up to do like one show. That they're going to go, I don't want to have to show them around, but I'm sure you charmed them into it if you were into the show.
I was like, the only thing I found like, not upsetting, but how would I describe, I was brought into the makeup room and the lady looked at the script and she said, okay, you're supposed to be a bit rough around the edges. And she just fluffed my hair and she goes, fine.
We've made you look slightly better than when you came in.
Yeah. She gave me a spit shine, Just fummed away the crust of food from around my mouth. You're ready,
So will the character, will Deborah be making a return? Did you impress so much?
I had a ball, and everyone is really nice, and I would do it again in a heartbeat, and I have faith, like, I know... Like Sean Williamson, who played Barry in EastEnders.
Yeah.
He wasn't Barry when he first came into EastEnders. So, like, this is not, like, genuinely, I find that man to be an inspiration. I do. He's passionate about stuff. He sings. He does quizzes. And he doesn't care what people think about him. And he just pursues what he loves in life. And that's genuinely what I want to do. So, like, because I fucking love quizzes.
Yeah.
As well. I can sing Something Inside So Strong, but I haven't unleashed that yet.
I read you were kind of a big Richard Osman fan. Have you managed to get onto Pointless or House of Games yet?
Yeah, both this year. Both this year. I can't say what happened. Yeah, I'll tell you after.
I was going to say, I would said if you hadn't gotten, I would have talked to him because like I can
bend
his.
Do you have his ear?
I can get people on House of Games. I've got one person on House of Games.
Did you? Yeah. Who?
I can't tell.
Could you tell me after?
Yeah.
I'll try
and remember who it was. There was one person. They'll be good on House of Games. But you would be excellent on House of Games, I'm guessing.
I had a ball.
Comedians do very well on House of Games. I'm a champion of champions. Just by the by.
Genuinely, I do. There's a weird dream of mine that I would love to go against you and Sean Williamson in quizzes.
And Angela Barnes is
there. Oh, shit, I would murder her. I would murder all of you. Like, I would love that. That would be great. Or Pat Master, R.I.P. Well, it's still about.
It's on TV now, Pat Master.
Yeah, shit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not good at pop music, so I would.
Are you not?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I sometimes do okay at Popmaster, but only if they ask three things about the 1980s and the first.
If they ask me anything about 2010, I can do well because I worked in a radio station then. So I can do that. Yeah. That's about it. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Richard.
I don't think you're allowed to specify to
the year.
Let's talk about. I can't wait to see on House of Games. I think that's going to be fantastic. let's talk about your Edinburgh show before I forget that, because this is the Edinburgh Fringe podcast we're here doing.
Get fringy.
Mm.
Exciting. It's called Soup, and it's a show. I've done a few Edinburgh shows, and most of them have been shit in some capacity. Because I lived in Ireland, and I didn't care about Edinburgh. I saw Edinburgh as a way to do a gig a day, every day. But I didn't care about the element of making a good show for an audience.
sort of. Yeah. Well, it's a very 80s and 90s attitude towards Edinburgh. Yeah. That certainly was my attitude in the early 90s.
I'm a bit behind my time, really. I kind of wasn't getting, I wasn't getting great reviews, and I understand why now. And I was like, fuck it, I'll try and do a show. So last year I did a show and it went well. But now this year, to follow up after that, I had what could be described as the physical manifestations of a nervous breakdown in Sainsbury's yesterday over it.
Over the show.
I couldn't control my spine. It was very odd. But let's get the vibes back again.
It's such a nerve wracking. Having talked, and not necessarily on the podcast, but talking to people who are doing Edinburgh and it's interesting going pre-Edinburgh doing this show because people are, I'm really nervous about it because it's, you haven't done the show yet. I mean, you've done previews, but you don't know until you get there.
So it's
incredibly, I mean, it is just such a mentally demanding time anyway, that whole month. But it's interesting, that pre-time, you forget once you've done it. Every year in Edinburgh, I forget how horrible Edinburgh is, and then I come back and do it again. Oh, yeah, why am I doing this again?
Yeah. But remembered this time.
Yeah, I did. I remember this time, which is why we're here in the Angel. It is weird that preempting it, yeah. But you've got to be confident. Your last year's show did really well.
I was really proud of last year's show. It was called Wet, and it was about aqua aerobics. No, it wasn't. Why am I lying? Trauma. It was about trauma. But I put aqua aerobics on the blurb because I didn't want to bum people out before they came in. it's best to surprise people with that type of thing. So, yeah, this year's show is about soup and trauma.
I've read you talking about processing stuff through comedy, which I think most comedians do to some extent. But is that do you find it? Does it work for you? If you're doing two in a row that are about trauma, that suggests the last one didn't work.
I know.
This works for me. Now I'm fine.
Yeah. Still sad. It's like a Morrissey album. It's like, I'm not happy yet. I got diagnosed with this thing called CPTSD, which is like complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And the thing was, when I was getting treatment for it, one of the things you have to do is like you have to go through the memory that triggered you. And what happened with me is that once So this man came into my house and robbed me. So I went through that memory. But the thing was, I was doing stand-up at the time.
Yeah.
So when this was happening, like, the dude had a knife and shit. And I was thinking to myself, just remember every detail, Alison. Take this out on stage. Some people some people have dead dads. This is your dead dad, you know? So I took in every detail. And I did stand-up about it. It was happened in July, and I did stand-up about it in August. Yeah. Did a show around it. And then I couldn't physically stop crying after every gig. And I was like, what is going on here? And then I went for treatment. And I was going, you have to go through the memory and go through it in minute detail until, like, he'll stop you. But the problem was that I couldn't remember the memory that traumatized me. I could only remember the stand-up routine that I wrote about it. So at that... I think I'm broken, Richard.
And the whole thing is just such a comedian.
It's just like,
I'm a comedian. Here I am, I'm a comedian. Something terrible happened, and I was looking at it and thinking, oh, well, I must run this for the routine I'm going to do about it, which is absolutely, same with me with my testicular cancer. I must remember, you know.
I know.
I was thinking about this last night at the gig, because I did some of the material at a general gig rather than one of my own gigs, so I was quite nervous about whether anyone knew who I was wasn't be interested. But I was thinking about how something happens when you're a comedian, and if it's different, you're just so focused, you're spotting the tiniest details.
Totally.
You know, there was a point when I went into a CT machine, and I didn't even do this routine last night, but I it was weird being in a CT machine, so you're scanning your whole body, but there was like a dent in the CT machine just at eye level. And just thinking, what the, as you're lying there being scanned, you think, what the fuck happened in here?
Yeah.
that someone's damaged this highly expensive machine. Did they have metal in their pocket? Did they just like, go nuts? And
I wonder, did they sneeze?
So like, but I think you become so focused in,
but also
the fact that something bad's happening to you and you're thinking about
stand-up.
This is great because I can do comedy about it.
It's terrible, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, like, but then equally, that I think, and then not having process to do it a month after it happened.
Oh, that was
that's. I mean, that's the definition of too soon.
Oh, definitely.
Too soon. Is it too soon? Yeah, it is, Alison, for your own sanity.
I mean, too soon would have been doing a joke in front of him with the knife. That would have been way too soon.
Call that a knife? That's what you should have done.
Yeah.
So is this year's show trying to process the stuff that you hadn't processed in last year's show, basically?
Last year's show, yeah. This year's show was like, the thing was, I'm not doing any material about what has given me CPTSD, because I'm not good enough to do that yet. I don't have the time and shit like that. This year, it's just not going to happen. So there's jokes about soup. There's jokes about, but it's kind of like, how do I describe it? I don't know. Am I talking this up in a way that would make you want to go see it?
I think it sounds very interesting. Okay. I would come see you anyway if I was there. but I think so. I think,
yeah.
But it's interesting. But, I think it's interesting what Edinburgh's become, because... Like I say, in the 90s, you could go with an idea or half an idea. You might do a proper show, but you might do a show where you didn't know what you were doing at all, and
work
it up over the... And so by the end, you had a good show. But even with a stand-up show, I think I would go, or a one-man show, I would go and we would work on it while we were there. But now it feels a lot more like most people are expecting you to turn up day one.
They want...
Polished show, which I'm not sure is as useful to us, but it's obviously maybe better for the audience.
And fuck those guys. That's my attitude. it is. I think it'll be a funny show, and I think if I'm being honest with you, I think over the next few days I need to make a decision on a thing.
Right.
To figure out. I used to have a projector in it.
Right.
And now I've taken the projector out.
It's a good call, because they're fucking pain in the ass.
One fucking punchline in the end it was actually doing. So right. I took out the projector. So now I'm I'm trying to figure out some stuff.
Yeah, but when I've been doing stand-up shows, which is a few years ago now, hopefully doing a new one next year, but even when you're touring, even when, I'm still right to the last performance.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it, trying to make it better, right? And
that's what I
do. So I think the whole thing is a process. Some people love coming to the early shows and seeing
you know, the failures, and but also the surprise successes, and like being a part of, oh, you know, I was there when that joke was thought up.
Basically. Totally. I think I like going to early shows so I can hear names of people that the jokes are about.
Yeah.
And then they change it around, you know, and then you're like, ah, you know. Yeah. Yeah, you should go to early previews for gossip.
Yes,
I feel like, yeah.
Well, definitely early on, you know, well, especially now for me, if I'm writing a new show, I'll mainly do it on stage.
Yeah.
So you, absolutely, yeah, you'll say things that you shouldn't say, or you'll go down blind alleys that you shouldn't go down. And then you've, you know, but then you go down an alley and it turns into an amazing piece of comedy. But yeah, I think you're always working on it. Mm. And the shows that were bad for me were when I got on tour, and then if there wasn't a big audience, I'd put my head down and just rush through the script, you know, rather than thinking, let's try and make this work for the people who've bothered to turn up.
Well, like, I found that the previews that I've done that have gone badly have been when I've expressed my true feelings on stage about the gig itself. Do you know?
Yeah, you've got to be careful about that.
Oh, there's nothing worse than not hearing an audience laugh, but hearing an audience go, you know? And I was waiting for my bus outside a gig a little while ago, and I heard this man walk down the stairs with his friends going, to be honest with you, I actually felt sorry for her. And then I looked at him and he's like, ah, la, 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 la. But it is good. Good show.
It's a good show.
Yeah,
Come and see. People should, but it's good. If the comedians make someone feel sorry for them, that's good. It's a reaction. You need a reaction. I think is as good as a laugh, to be honest. I think like it's interesting. Like, I played to like 1,000 people yesterday, which is very weird for me, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting to hear that. It's great to hear 1,000 people laughing, but it's also interesting to hear 1,000 people be disgusted by the same idea.
Wouldn't it be great to bring that to like entertainment? Just go on House of Games and then go like, I've never felt love before, Richard, you know?
But, you know, so many comedians have... you know, that's why people have become, why a lot of comedians have become comedians, because there's something that they're working through, or because they've you know, there's an insecurity in it, in that idea of wanting to make a load of strangers like you.
Oh, Christ, yeah, that instant validation.
Yeah, so, like, you know, it's that's part of being, again, it's part of being, everything you're saying is just like, you know, if I was a therapist, I'd just be, it's a comedian, she's a comedian. That's what I'd write down.
That's what I want, yeah. That'd be great.
But because I read you saying in lockdown that, COVID made you think, oh, I'm just a person, you said that you didn't feel like a comedian anymore. Because I haven't done, I thought it was really weird. I read that after last night. I did my gig last night, and then I went to the back and sat outside the tent and watched Alan Davis do his set.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, but I was just up there doing this. So I was the other way around. I kind of forgotten that I was a comedian, and I couldn't quite work out how I'd managed to go on stage with something that I hadn't really done before, and I couldn't envisage that I had the confidence to do that, or that I was that person. So because I haven't done comedy for a while, it just felt so alien to think, fuck, I just went up there and told 1,000 people about my balls, and was funny and in command and was good. It was good.
Yeah.
But like now I'm sitting here, it just doesn't feel like that could possibly have done that. And it's because I haven't done stand up for ages.
It's weird. I feel like a very not powerful person outside of comedy, or like when I'm on stage, there's this weird thing of like I feel like I remember once, like, I used to get, because I wear quite bright clothing and I'm fat. And, like, sometimes what would happen is, like, some people might come up to me in the street. Years ago, I wrote an article about it. And this, like, people, like, call me names and stuff. And I found it strange. But when I went up on stage, if anyone called me a name, I would destroy them. And it was the only place where I felt, like, fully safe, that's why I love doing comedy. Yeah. I think it's like, you feel like you're a different person for about 10 or 15 minutes, even though you're just exaggerating yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what is stand-up to me.
Yeah, but you are. It is. You know, it's such a weird job to do. And I think when you do it all that, so like it's interesting, COVID, you suddenly went, oh, I'm not doing that job anymore. Oh, God, you know, I'm not a comedian anymore.
I'm a member of society.
But it is, you know, I can completely understand why comedians go insane, right? I think if you, and I was thinking, because it's so like, it's, I mean, again, I've, as I was saying to you backstage, I don't really take drugs, but it is a sense of...
Wait, do you want to give context
she offered me a load of drugs and I said, I don't really do those. I don't think we should do it before the show anyway. Maybe if it goes well, we'll sniff those up. But like, you know, it's so like, you know, the whole experience is so like the confidence.
Yes.
That you're the center of attention.
Yeah.
And then if you're going off and then taking cocaine as well, if you get that level of feeling like that, some comedians go insane on the power of it and start to believe the person on stage is them and that they are that amazing.
Yeah, because you get like, there are some comedians that get told they're philosophers as well as comedians, which is the biggest load of balls. Like, it's not important. You know, our jobs are not important. We're just fucking about. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, that mixed with cocaine, it's going to make quite the prick. Quite the prick, I'd say.
But it is, you know, it's an extraordinary, it's sort of extraordinary. As much as the podcast is a lovely thing to do, it doesn't give me in any way the same feelings that I get from doing stand-up.
No, you don't get that instant. No. The first time I did stand-up, it was like the greatest feeling I've ever... I'd no interest in stand-up before. Didn't respect it. Didn't care about it.
Yeah.
The only time I saw stand-up was like on mute on a DVD player at a house party. I lived in quite a rural part of Ireland. And I saw Eddie Murphy raw, but that's only because I love Eddie Murphy. Like his films and stuff, you know. So then when I did stand-up, someone told me to do stand-up and organised a gig, and I did it. And then this feeling of like relief and adrenaline and everything, it was the best high I've ever had in my life. Like, it's stronger than even falling in love or anything. It's just like that's what I chased the whole time. So that comes in handy when things go shit ways, you know. You're like, oh, but what about that, you know? Yeah, I keep chasing that. I don't know if that's ever
going to
come.
You know, it's worth, in your life, it's worth remembering that you are, you know, you can be that person on stage. So it is, you know, I completely get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
As another comedian, I really get it. But it is, you know, it is, I guess, it's sort of enhancing that, you know, a lot of comedy can be self-destructive and can be, you know, like, you know, you're working through your mental issues. One is working through one's mental issues with it. And you know, I think it is, it's sort of, when I stepped back from it last night, you know, it was like, oh, wow, you know, but it was me. I can't believe it was me, but it was me that did it. So there's at least a part of me that is that guy on stage.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, how big of a part is that
you? Now, much less, because I think I'm much happier in my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like my life and I like being at home with my family and, you know, I'm not that bothered about, you know.
Yeah.
But equally, it's... I mean, my wife always used to say when I came off tour and didn't do stand-up for a couple of months, she'd be wanting me to go out and do it again because I...
Would you be grumpy?
I wouldn't always be grumpy. I just, you know, it just changed my mood in a positive way to, you know, to perform on stage. I don't think I need it as much anymore, but I think it is interesting how, you know, I feel more alive today than I did yesterday.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's, you know, there is still something in there. But I think again, that's just over time. But you know, you'll work through stuff.
I am going to do that.
Yeah. I think, you know, you're so
can you just tell me I'll be happy?
But you've got to remember that you're this person. You're this really funny, really funny, really inventive and amazing person who also has the confidence to do what you do, which most people would rather. Genuinely, I think a lot of people would rather die than be a stand-up comedian.
Oh, they tell me that all the time. I could not do that. It's like, you don't have to. It's fine. You
know, it's a very competitive marketplace. They really don't want people in it who are shit and don't want to be there.
Yeah.
But look, I'm sure the show will be great. It's at 125 at the Monkey Barrel.
Yes.
Called Soup.
I got merch and shit.
What merch have you got?
String tote bags.
Oh, yes, I read that.
String tote bags and a badge with Soup written on it.
That's good.
Designed by my own fair hand. Because I couldn't pay anyone to do it.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Well, look, also today I was listening to your podcast, Wheel of Misfortune. Was it a BBC?
BBC Sounds, yeah. And then Radio 5 Live took over it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I started it with Fern Brady.
That's right, yeah.
He's like my best mate. And then Fern got Taskmaster and the book and an autism diagnosis and realised that she couldn't, like, overburden herself with work.
Yeah.
So it was great because she quit. And we're still very good friends.
Yeah.
Which I feel very relieved about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because, like, it's weird to start off a podcast with your best mate and then stay best mates with them and then replace her with Kerry Katona.
Yeah. Well, I've done that a lot in my life. I mean,
I would love to see you do a show with Kerry Katona.
Well, I'll try and book her now you've suggested it. It is fun. It's, you know, it's like you look and you go, what? How did that happen and how did that possibly work? And
yes.
What universe is this happened to the Alison Smittle and Kerry Katona?
I know.
It really works. The two of you together is fabulous.
I adore Kerry. I think it's because I grew up in Ireland. And when Brian McFadden and Kerry Katona divorced, she got Ireland in the divorce.
Right.
Like, she is the greatest living English woman. Ireland loves her, right. Like really, really loves her. So like, I always had a very big respect for her. I'm kind of like, you know the way people have like special interests and stuff? I loved pop music when I was a kid. And when I couldn't understand why like Bewitched didn't have like another album, and I found out as an adult like record companies took over other record companies and then bands would be dropped, and I'm very interested in pop stars and how they were treated in the late 90s, early 2000s, because I think there's actual, like, I think Simon Fuller should be took up in front of The Hague for human rights crimes and then shot. I love pop stars and I have a deep respect for them, and Kerry was one of them. And I love doing podcasts, and I had this idea for a podcast called Our Findus Crispy Pancakes Feminist. And what it was going to be was like a comedic investigative program about, I was trying to retroactively make things that I liked as a kid to be feminist. So I interviewed Kerry because I was going to say the head of Iceland, but she she was the face of Iceland. And we just got on really well. And I just suggested her as a alternative guest presenter for Wheel of Misfortune, and we just got on quite well.
Yeah.
And then that's what happened. Yeah, we continued working together. So yeah, I adore her. She's very nice.
Yeah, well, it's well worth listening to. Mm. So you finished it now, though. It's over now.
Yeah, it's over
but
now.
All the episodes are there.
Well, so that's like an exclusive to you. I've told no one else.
Oh, okay.
But like, yeah.
Well, I won't tell anyone.
Well, it's over now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I'm sorry.
Heartbroken people.
Did you send in a voice note?
No.
Okay.
Well, it's lovely because you get people send in their stories and you commentate on them and joke about them and in a nice way. It's very supportive.
Oh yeah, my favorite episode we ever did was the mental health episode where like a woman sent in a voice note about beheading a toy owl that belonged to a flatmate of her boyfriend's. And then the flatmate texts her boyfriend to go, "Who's beheaded my owl?" And the boyfriend looked at her and goes, "No." And we had a special guest called Maurice, who was in the same rehab facility as Kanye. So Kanye West. So it was like a fun episode. I like doing episodes. I like talking about being a bit mental.
Yeah.
Because it's funny. Like, to have a mental breakdown is hilarious. You're acting like a clown.
Yes.
You know,
comedy is always treaded that line. I think I've always been interested in that. That being a comedian is often sort of pretending or harnessing your own mental
that raw mental power, problem. fracking feelings.
So a clown is sort of a mentally ill person.
Oh,
isn't
for
it,
sure. So, oh my God, especially sexually active clowns. You know, those people freak me out. I don't mind clowns, but clowns who fuck, no, yeah. Thank you.
You met a lot of those. In the costume, or I mean, they're allowed to fuck when they're not clowns, right? You know, they're not priests, they're not celibate. You become a clown, you're not allowed to have sex anymore.
They should be. I think they should dedicate their life to chuckles. You know.
I mean, I don't think they get much sex, do they? Even the ones that are allowed to.
You'd be surprised. And they always went, "Hi." And I just,
You believe in fairies?
Did you Google me?
I've looked you up.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
It's only polite.
Yeah, that's true. So, I'm from some. Okay. What happens is, back in the day, Ireland, right, there was like a war between, not that war, it was a war between fairies and humans,
okay.
And the humans and fairies came to like a ceasefire and said, we'll have to split this country in half, and the humans were like, great, we're going to take it from the ground up, and the fairies will have it from the ground down,
okay.
And the fairies weren't happy with that. And they built portals and shit. And now I did a documentary about living in the countryside. And I went near a fairy fort, like just filming near it. I don't believe, but I believe deep down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same way I'm not a Catholic anymore. I'm not a Catholic anymore, but I do light candles.
Yeah.
For like if someone's dying or like the lottery or whatever, I'll light a candle. I was filming this documentary and the cameras turned off and the sound guy was like, "Oh, there's things messing with the radio here."
Wow.
And a dude beside me said, "It's the fairies." And I can't think of any other explanation.
Okay. That might be some kind of electrical fault, but you know, I just thought of that off the top of my head.
Ireland's
the batteries ran out. I don't know, it could be, you know, a couple of.
What things. About the financial crisis, worldwide financial crisis? Explain that, because Ireland's most richest man,
yeah.
Right? He built a hotel on top of a fairy fort. The locals warned him, said, "Don't do it, man, don't do it." And he's like, no, I'm gonna put the dolmens and stuff in a different section near the hotel so you can see it there. And then the financial crash happened. He's in jail now.
Right.
And that's because of the fairies.
Well, so, I mean, it seems unfair of the fairies to cause that problem to all of us because of that one guy. But that's I mean, I love the fact that Ireland is not content with dividing itself like into north and south. It's sort of above ground and below. So even if we unite Ireland, people say, "Oh, yeah, but we haven't got all of it back together yet." Not till the fairy folk are above ground again.
What I love, Richard, is your accent saying Ireland divided itself.
Yeah, fair enough.
English people are like, "I tripped and fell over. And look, half the world. Oh, my God."
Now, some of the Irish people enjoy being in Great Britain.
You sound like my dad.
The guys with the bowler hats. They go out on 12th of July, which is my birthday. My favourite colour used to be orange. I haven't had the heart to tell them it's not anymore. I love banging drums. What's
you love
wrong
banging
with it?
Drums?
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, they love a bonfire.
I love a bonfire. It's all in my honour. It's all fine.
Oh, yeah.
Let's ask you some emergency questions.
Oh, amazing.
And move away from that. Fucking hell.
No, imagine if I was like, no, let's stay.
As I understand it, the English may have had something to do with the division. I've been fact-checking again, apparently. Apparently the English also put the fairies underground as well. I'll ask you a question. Let's ask you the chrysalis question. If you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar does and dissolve and come out as anything you could be, what would you like to come out of the chrysalis as?
I'd like to come out as you.
Would you? Yeah.
For the crack.
What a waste of a chrysalis.
I'd like to go as the first person I see. Like, I'd be curious about what it's like to be... do you ever walk down the street and then you look at people and you're like, oh, they've got their own lives, you know? Maybe some of them have killed. Yeah. like, how many people are here? Like, someone... No, I'm not going to say that. It's a horrible anecdote. so we'll save that. But, like, you know, we're all in here now. Someone's definitely done fraud. Like, statistically.
Yeah.
Probably me. I'd love to, like, just any random person.
Yeah, it would be, I absolutely know exactly what you mean. It would be very interesting to live someone else's life.
Do I get to go back as me?
No, you have to stay.
Oh, fuck. You're right,
you've got, you're in the body of a random person who could have committed fraud.
No, can't pick that person. Holly Willoughby.
Oh, yeah, that'd be enough. I think that might be worse than being me. I mean, I'd like to be Holly Willoughby for a day just for various reasons of my own. but I don't know if I'd like to be trapped inside that inside that empty shell. Fuck off.
It's a spicy episode today. I love it.
She's worse than Hitler, and you know it. Even Hitler would have stayed loyal to Philip Schofield.
Oh, that is hilarious.
I'm going to leave that in, but, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if Holly's ever a guest on the show, don't bring it up. I'll be very polite to her. She seems lovely. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this question is. I don't think I've asked it to anyone before. Haven't even read it to myself yet. I've only read the first three words.
Okay.
So let's see what it is. If you could be the king or queen of any genus of living creature and have them do your bidding, which living creature would you like to rule over and make them do?
So
your
I'm
bidding?
A parasite.
No, you are the king. You could say, like, if I would say I'd like to be king of the badgers, or the badgers. If I would just go, all the badgers would do
come,
whatever I
do your bidding.
Do whatever I told them to do.
Okay.
Go and badge something over there.
Tapeworms.
Tapeworms, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'd inflict them on my enemies. You know? You could teach the tapeworm, you could put the tapeworm into medical school, teach them how to be doctors, and then they could, like, go into orifices and, like, sort out the girl that, you know? They could have saved your balls years ago. Oh,
not sure. I think they would have just eaten them, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
they would have eaten my healthy balls. I mean, it would have solved the problem.
Well, I think, like, wouldn't it be... Yeah, no, we'd teach them how to, like, medically...
Yeah.
To learn
To
about...
begin with, you said you'd send them to your enemies, and then suddenly it shifted into you being, like...
Well, because...
Someone trying to win the Nobel Prize for medicine. But to begin with, your first thought was, I'd get tapeworms so I could give tapeworms to people I don't like.
Yeah, look, I'm like Alfred Nobel, aren't I?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I've developed a bomb, but also want to do good as well. You know?
I mean, you could do both. There's the good tapeworms and the evil tapeworms.
Yeah.
They both go to different schools.
Yes, I'll send the tapeworms that haven't passed medical school to my enemies.
Okay.
And then the medical
They do quite a good job on their own of being unpleasant.
Yeah,
but
that's
I guess
true.
To target it would be quite good. Yeah.
If you put a little white coat on them, you'd trust them, wouldn't you?
I guess you would. Let's try another. Well, that's okay. I don't think anyone will top that answer, but we'll see. This is the AI question that works.
Okay.
What is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love?
In the name of love. Yeah. Okay. So I was about. It's about 15, I'd say, and there was this fella called Paddy.
Mm-hmm.
And Paddy asked me out like, we met in this place called the Harriers. I can't believe I'm talking to you about the Harriers.
No, tell me.
So this place is, it's a athletics club and underage disco.
Is it just, is it a disco that only underage kids go to, or is it an underage disco where people who are interested in underage kids can come and dance?
Well,
because that's a different, those are two very different things.
It was officially an underage, but this is the interesting part, right? Yeah. So I come from Westmead, which is like one county away from this underage disco. It would get a 5-county radius. Everyone would come in to dance at this place. But there was also a pub attached to it that was only separated with glass.
Okay.
So I'm like 14 or 15 dancing, and I'm looking at like men in their 40s drinking pints. And it's not in the town. It's in like an industrial estate. So you really had to go out of your way to go to that pub.
Yeah.
So like it felt like being in an aquarium.
For perverts.
For perverts, yeah.
Well, that's like,
they can't
that's
touch
quite,
the whales.
It's quite a nice idea because it's safe, isn't it? They're, they're safe. You're safe behind the glass.
I know, yeah.
But they get
the
pleasure of, you know, a lot of people would say an aquarium's a morally dubious thing.
Oh, well, it depends on, like, if you fancy fish, it is, isn't it? So, like, he asked me out in this place called the Harriers, and it was a week before Valentine's Day. And he bought me a load of flowers. But I was like a feral person. I'd never been asked out before. I'd never been in a relationship or anything like that and didn't know how to take this kindness. So I got the flowers and I beat them off the side of a Primark in front of him and said, "Oh, I bet you love this." And he's like, "No." And
it wasn't the beating off he'd been hoping for. Let's
no, not the side of Primark, no. Yeah. So yeah, that was the most ludicrous thing I think that I've done. Yeah,
that's a sad story.
Is it sad? Shit.
It is. Well, it's, you know, it's, yeah, it loves a terrible tragic thing. You know, it's, if it works out, it's even worse. So, you know, it's just be careful what you wish for.
I have a boyfriend now.
Good.
Yeah. 10 years.
Does he live in another town?
No,
goes to a different school.
He's like,
just like, I have a boyfriend now. Just,
yes,
I assumed you did.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I was like, yeah. He's actually a big fan of yours.
Is he?
Yeah, he has your DVDs and stuff. Oh. And he told me when I was doing this joke about, I had this really funny joke.
Yeah.
I felt about like that you didn't know what part of Jesus you ate when you had communion.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's like, "Do you want to listen to this Richard Herring bit?" And then I was like, "Oh my God, he's come up with the same idea I have." And he's like, "Yeah, several years before." And I'm like, "Okay." So
I'm sure many people have.
And then I found out you're not Catholic, and I was actually angry with you.
Yeah, because there is Protestant communion, but it isn't actually Jesus' body and blood. You're correct.
What is it?
It's just, that's the whole fucking difference between Protestants
but
and Catholics.
What's the
so
point,
it's your
then?
You're bloody going about Irish history. That's the reason. That's the reason you're fucking fighting each other.
You tasted it? Communion.
I don't think I ever did it. No.
You can have it. Like, you don't have to convert.
But, it doesn't turn into. It's not a pleasant idea. The idea that in your body, the bread and wine's going to turn into the blood and body of some dead bloke from 2,000 years ago. I don't want that.
It's like jerky at this point, isn't it? it's like a
weird
pepperami.
It's both weird to think it is the body of Jesus and that it isn't.
Yeah.
So it's a strange ceremony.
That's a bit of theatre, you know?
It is a bit of theatre. And you get a little bit of bread and some wine.
I know.
So, you know, who can argue with that? During lockdown, you did co-video parties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was where I got people to tweet along while we watched the film on Twitter, while Twitter existed in a happy way. I'm so sad it's gone now. It's like, but we
Twitter rather than COVID, or both.
Yeah,
I'm so sad COVID's over.
Yeah, I like staying in my house. But I would dress up as characters from the film that people would pick. So like Matilda, I dressed up as Miss Trunchbull, which I realised that I quite like her outfits.
Yeah.
I don't like her actions, but her fashion sense was quite cool. It's like Rose West. I don't like what she did, but I really love her glasses. And it's a shame that she's destroyed that.
She's spoiled it. It's like Hitler and the moustache.
Yeah, it is. It really is. She's the female Hitler. Yeah. So I would dress up as different characters and stuff from films. So it was good fun.
Yeah.
And it helped me through COVID. And also, like, I don't know about... COVID was such a shitty time.
It was very
nice to just watch a film every day and have that. And I got, like, sponsored by, like, a pretzel company.
Wow.
And they gave me a big box of pretzels. And
did they pay you as well, or did they just give you pretzels?
Oh, they paid me. But I didn't eat the... I threw out the pretzels, so I realised I don't like pretzels.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you say that when you were sponsoring it?
Did I fuck?
They've sent me a load of pretzels, and they're fucking shit. Thanks for the money. It's what you're not. You have to pretend to like the thing.
I know you
listen
do.
Listen to me doing my. It's just me pretending to like all the things
all
I say. I just pretending. Damn. I don't. I love.
This would be a great place for a commercial break.
we'll cut to the late advert. I love all of them. I only take things that I really believe in. when you go to Edinburgh, do you have any rituals? Is there things you always do in Edinburgh, or
do I like doing there? I like going to Paradise Pams,
okay,
which is like a restaurant. They've got quite grumpy waiters,
okay,
and I like to be abused. And what else do I like to do? I used to flyer a lot,
yeah,
and on the Royal Mile there was quite. You could see every day there was a person dressed up as the Predator and another person dressed up as a witch, and they didn't like each other. And they would argue a lot. So I would watch that.
Yeah.
And that was fun. That was fun. And I'm doing a new metal karaoke night this year. So it's called System of a Clown.
Yeah.
And it's where you get to sing like Papa Roach and other depressing songs as a comedian.
Great.
Yeah. It sounds very self-indulgent now, but...
Look, it's the Edinburgh fucking Fringe.
I know, yeah. We'll do a really sad bit 15 minutes before the end. I like doing that. I like doing silly things.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you go and watch a lot of stuff at Edinburgh?
Yes.
Do you, yeah. Is there anyone you're looking forward to?
I like looking forward to watching stuff that's not comedy.
Yeah.
So last year I watched a hypothetical play about whether Frank Sinatra would ever confront Woody Allen in the 90s about what he did. And it was done by a Frank Sinatra impersonator who would sing in the middle of the show.
Right.
He would get a baseball bat and he would beat the crap out of the whole room. And then he'd be like, I got the kick out of you. I'm looking forward to watching stuff that I would never see elsewhere.
Yeah, I don't think you'd ever see that anywhere else.
No. I mean, shouldn't have really seen it then.
I mean, I'm not sure Frank Sinatra can really criticise Woody Allen that much anyway, because he married Mia Farrow when she was like 19, or it might even mean.
Oh yeah, Woody brought that up. Yeah. Woody.
Oh, did he?
There was a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you be careful, Frank. It wasn't the real guys, right?
Oh no.
That would be good if Frank Sinatra and Woody Allen got together to do a two-man show about Mia Farrow. I mean, I know it's going to be difficult for Frank, and it's unlikely that Woody would sign up. But imagine thinking, let's work this through at the Edinburgh Fringe. Let's pretend to be lookalikes. No one will believe it's really us, but let's do it.
And then we'll have it out.
And I'll sing a song in the middle.
Yeah,
and you can do it. Film. His film's got so bad, Woody Allen.
I've only seen Manhattan.
Well, that's a good one.
But it's a weird bit.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff in there.
There's some weird stuff in that. I was like, how did we not know?
It was different. It was a different time.
Oh, was. But, like, it was funny. So he's, like, in Manhattan, he's dating, like, a 17-year-old.
Yeah, it's
something,
awful.
Something younger. And then his two mates is just like, this new girlfriend's quite cool. And you're like, what? Anyway, it actually was kind of good, though, I have to say. But I wish I watched it before I knew what he did.
Yeah, well, watch it before. I haven't watched it since I knew what he did.
Oh, so you're better than me.
I am.
Yeah.
I think older, I think, that maybe. I don't think you had the chance to watch it before he did what he did.
No,
Cool. And there's, well, you're always involved in lots of other podcasts as well. People can find you. You do the Guilty Feminist and the,
yes.
Is the Gargle of...
The Gargle. I love doing the Gargle. Love doing the Guilty Feminist. I like doing podcasts.
Yeah.
I like being a silly goose on podcasts and chatting shite. So I'm very thankful to be on this.
Well, and, I'm very thankful to have
you. Yeah, I want to do more podcasts in the future. Like, I'd like to come up with my own, like, because Wheel of Misfortune is done. So I want to come up with new podcasts. That bloody crispy pancake one, it got commissioned, but I can't release it.
Right.
And I want to buy it out. I feel like... like a singer in the 60s who's like, give me my masters, you know? But, because I got paid for it. Like, so I'd like to make something. I like doing podcasts and stuff.
And is the acting something that you're pursuing, or is it just when...
Yeah, it's strange because I did a sitcom in Ireland and I acted in it. And I was there with professional actors. And I was there reading my own script beside my friend. And I was like, I know I wrote this, but what emotion am I supposed to give here? So I want to get like better at acting and do acting. It would be great. Yeah. Because I like it. It's fun. It's just you're messing about, aren't you?
It is. Again, like it's one of those things with acting when you... It's easy to look at it from the outside and go, it's just saying stuff and doing stuff. But it is. But it's exactly that. When you work with good actors, you go, oh, yeah, fuck, this is intimidating and amazing.
I'd love to cry on demand.
Yeah.
Like, if I could cry right now in front of you, I would.
I would love to. Go on, give it a go. let's both try and cry. I can't. I don't think I can cry.
No.
I'm emotionally dead.
I've got blocked tear ducts, I've been told.
You got blocked?
I was going to say legally, but I mean medically.
Okay. They've been legally blocked.
Yeah, they've been impounded. You can't pay, we'll take away. Some dude of his shoe on my tear ducts.
Just like, using those tears. Yeah. And are you going to tour this show afterwards? So, yeah,
I'm going to tour the show. I toured it wet and I'm going to tour Soup. And it's going to be great fun. I'm going to do the Dublin Fringe Festival as well.
Right.
And I'd like to... they haven't confirmed where I'm going to be touring, but it is going to happen.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I enjoyed touring wet. I'm trying to think of, like... Do I have any funny anecdotes from wet? No. Fuck. It's very boring, isn't it, being a comedian?
It is very boring.
Like, yeah.
I mean, I think touring's like a week, you know, it feels like it's going to be fun and it feels like it's going to be full of incident, but actually it's just doing the show, going back to the hotel on your own, feeling sad.
Oh,
going
yeah!
Going to the next town, not seeing anything.
I know. I love it when a hotel has a bath, though.
Yeah,
because I get bought quite a lot of bath bombs by virtue of being a woman. And... no research has been made into whether I have a bath or not.
You don't have a bath?
No. So I got a whole load of them at home. So I just come out anytime like with a bath bomb, being optimistic.
So are you only touring in the hope of using up your supply of bath bombs?
Yeah. I stayed in Britain's worst hotel the other night.
Did you?
According to YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was actually quite nice.
Where was it?
Sasha's in Birmingham. Okay. Oh, no, Sasha's in Manchester. Someone informed me that people only go to that hotel if they're too coked up and can't get home.
Okay.
But I had a great time. A man did proposition me in the lift, though.
Okay.
But he was really nice about it, so... He was.
Yeah.
He was bringing home a takeaway, and we just did small talk. And he's like, would you like to come in for a drink into my room? And I was like, no, you got a takeaway, man. You know, you've got other plans. And also, I have a boyfriend. But I watched Taskmaster and just had a bath. It was great.
With your bath bomb.
With my bath
bomb. And the man sat eating his takeaway on his own.
Yeah.
Thinking what could have been.
Exactly. He's probably watching Taskmaster as well. But it was great. The buffet was terrible the next day, though.
Was it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of bad hotels. I thought the... is it called? I mean, you know, we are libeling loads of hotels.
Fuck it.
I mean, probably saying something's the worst hotel in the country is probably
I libel. Didn't say that. YouTube said it, and I said it was quite nice.
Well, I'm going
to
say this is the worst hotel. I think it's the Britannia in Manchester is the BBC used to put people up in there, and it's the last time I stayed in that, I was in a room which was no windows. It was somewhere in the middle of the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like just a box in the middle of the hotel. And I said, I'm never staying there again.
My God.
And there's sex workers in the bar who proposition you. That's all right. But they want money. You proposition by a guy, you wouldn't have expected any money. He'd have given you half a takeaway.
I probably would have been lonely in the night. Expect that. I would go, it's going to go cold.
That never happens. never happens to me. I never get propositioned in the lift by a man with a takeaway. And if it happened, I would just go, look, I'm going to forget about my marriage vows for one night. Depending on the takeaway, what was it?
I don't know. No. I didn't look at it. I just kind of like got out of the lift and I was like, okay.
It's nice because you hear so many bad stories about men propositioning women. It's nice that he was a nice, disgusting man.
Yeah, yeah.
He was polite. If that's all you have to, if you're a disgusting man, just be polite about it. Eventually someone in the lift will come back.
Just keep going up and down the lift.
One of them will go, yes.
You throw
enough shit at the wall. Someone will stick. And that is, you know, that's my dating technique. You're welcome. Oh, you've got to go. You're welcome. Give it a go. Well, look, it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you and meet you. Well, not meet you because I have met you before, but talk to you again. Go and see Alison Spittle do Soup at the Monkey Barrel, 1:25 p.m. and then round the world
in a variety of 10.
Then go and look in hotels and get in the lift, and she'll rebuff you. If that's your thing, some people like to be rebuffed.
I did thank him. Yeah. Like I was like, oh, no thanks, but thank you. How would you say it? Like if you were to rebuff someone,
I've never. It's never happened. I would go, thank you for the offer, and yes, I will do whatever you want. Thank you. I'm just so grateful. I'm 56 years old. I can't believe anyone would want to spend some time.
You sound like someone going off The Apprentice. Yeah? thank you for the opportunity.
I think being polite is, you know, it's not because it is a bold thing to... Even to proposition a stranger. I mean, it's very bold to proposition a stranger in the
lift. It was 10 seconds of small talk as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd have told him to fuck off if I was you. Okay. Because it's absolutely out of order. But yeah, I don't know. It's nice to be polite. And it's sensible to be polite, unfortunately, in this awful world we live in.
Once I got propositioned by him, I've only been propositioned twice.
Okay.
So it's not like loads. But like, I used to hold a sign for a comedy club in Dublin. And this man came up to me and he goes, he was very drunk. He was chatting. He goes, oh, you've got quite big feet. You're like a duck. And then he goes, but I like that.
Did that work?
No.
I love the idea. No, it's busy work. I would, but I'm busy holding this sign. I mean, the desperation of a man. He sees a woman working as a fucking sign. He goes, well, I haven't had any luck anywhere else. I'll go and tell her she's got duck feet. I mean, basically, that's, from what I understand, that's basically the game of the book, The Game. You've got to go in and say a weird thing to the person
that will unsettle
them. Yeah. And then, if you want to have relationships with people, this is my advice. Just be honest and be nice to them. Yeah. And about 50% of them will sleep with you.
That's a very short book, though, Richard.
It is. But it gets results, guys. That's all I'm saying. Gets results. Look, it's a love. I wish we could talk for longer.
Yes.
But we have a man waiting upstairs to do his show. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the amazing Alison Spittle. Go and see her show. I hope you enjoyed your free gifts. If you felt there's a bucket at the exit, if you feel like giving some money to Scope, but don't feel you have to. That's just thank you for coming along. Goodbye.
You have been listening to Rahalastapo with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Alison Spittle. Scant Regard provide the music. I'm indebted to George the Incompetent Soundman, Chris Evans, not that one, Ben Evans, not that one, everyone at the Bill Murray pub. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.